What's good? What's good? We are back. Another live from Vietnam Friday. As usual, every Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time until somebody puts me in the grave or until I croak over or something of that nature. We're going to be live every Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. And the audio version goes to Spotify, Apple, Amazon, Deezer, TuneIn, Stitcher, Slacker, iHeartRadio, Player FM, and much more. I'm gonna give my guests some time to come on. You know, sometimes cats be running a little bit late and whatnot, which is just part of the internet game in general. And sometimes things happen where cats got to reschedule too. You know, Smooth the Hustler got reared in on the way to the interview, so he had to reschedule. But weather's nice. Feels like California weather. I don't know what's going on in Fort Bragg, man. They shooting a lot of guns and dropping a lot of bombs. Like, they dropped one earlier. They shot something off and literally just popped the whole front door open. Front door just opened up and just from the kaboom and whatnot. But that's Vietnam. That's the military mindset. All right, so here's our guest. We about to bring him on. Some of y'all might know him from the legendary group Brand Nubian. Some of y'all might know him also because he's had an extraordinary solo career as well. 9 group albums, 12 solo albums, 1 EP, 2 collab albums, 1 with Elder Sensei, and another one with Agala. And it's an honor that I bring on the one and only Sadat X.
Peace.
What's good? How you feeling, man?
I'm all right. I'm good.
You in North Carolina nowadays, right?
Yeah, I'm in Raleigh right now. I'm in Raleigh.
How you liking the weather so far today?
I mean, it's good. The weather was nice down here today, so it was all right. I just came from New York Monday. It was cold up there, but I got back down here. It's pretty nice.
How often are you back and forth?
I usually go up maybe once or twice a month just to see my youngest daughter.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I want to start with your name. You know, I'm infatuation with Egyptian culture and whatnot, and used to be called Derek X, it said, and then it said you got your name from Egyptian President Anwar Sadat. Is that true?
Well, it's partly true. You know, his name was Sadat, but also it was taken out of the 5% nation also. So it was a combination of both. You know, Anwar Sadat definitely was a great man, tried to be a peacemaker out there in the Middle East. So, you know, he's definitely to be revered. And, you know, I definitely took part of it from him.
Now, it says your pops bought you a turntable to DJ when you was a kid. You had a DJ D-Rock was one of your names and Kid Paradise. Was one your DJ name and one your rap name at the time, or were they both DJ names?
Well, they both was DJ names. DJ, one was D-Rock. That was my first name. Then DJ Paradise. Where that was like 6th, 7th grade. That was in the young days.
Now, how good of a DJ were you?
I mean, well, I wasn't really that much of a DJ. You know, that was in the early days of just mixing back and forth. It wasn't even really no scratching with it like that. But, you know, I enjoyed it. I did have a little setup. You know, that was my first introduction into hip hop, you know, basically. So it definitely was real.
Now, it says you known Alamo basically your whole childhood, correct?
I know Alamo since I know myself. It's never a time when I didn't know him. My father and Alamo's father grew up together.
And then y'all ended up moving to New Rochelle, and it says that's where you met Pooba and Lord Jamar, correct?
Exactly. I was living in the Bronx. I was born in the Bronx, moved to New Rochelle. Alamo moved to New Rochelle also about a year after I did. And then we met Pooba and Jamar.
Now, why did y'all guys ultimately decide to form the legendary group Brand Nubian?
Well, what it was is Pooba was you know, he was already out. He had a group, Masters of Ceremony.
Okay.
So they was already out, you know, and he was the, you know, like New Rochelle is a pretty big town, but small in the sense of the hip hop at that time. And, you know, everybody knew everybody who was involved with it. And it just so happened that, you know, me and Jamal was under Pooba. You know, we were rhyming, and he took it upon himself to try to, you know, produce both of us. And it just so happened that we made a song together and took it from there. Like, we wasn't always a group like that.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And who came up with the name Brand Nubian?
I think that we all did. You know, we all brainstormed and, you know, went through different things, different cultural names, and that's what we came up with.
Now, at that time, I mean, you got Pooba with his voice, you with your voice, and then Lord Jamar. Y'all feel like y'all was one of the most unique groups at that time?
Well, I feel we was definitely one of the most unique, being that, we, you know, our message was a little bit different.
Okay.
For the times of the music that was out. It was right along the lines of the gangster rap era. And, you know, our message was a little more message of positivity.
And speaking of positivity, there was a the America's Dying Slowly compilation that you was on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was about, like, AIDS awareness. So doing that compilation, was it a little bit more than just entertainment for you?
Well, you know, that was a big crisis at the time. You know, it still had a lot of stigma behind having AIDS, and people really didn't understand it yet. So we just wanted to try to bring a little bit more awareness to what was going on.
And I remember you was on the Biggie song, Come On. Now, that track was originally supposed to be on Ready to Die, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did they ever tell you why it didn't make the cuts for the album?
Well, I will say that me and Puff got into a beef, and basically he didn't put it on the album, and he knew he couldn't bully me like he was bullying the rest of the people. He knew that wasn't going to work with me. So the only way he could really do something is just by not putting it on the album. And Biggie was mad at that.
And Lord Finesse produced that track, correct?
Yeah, the original one, definitely.
Now, was that the first time you worked with anybody from DITC, or did you work with Diamond before that?
Well, I had been a friend of Diamond before that. And, you know, because when we first came out with Brand Nubian, we was using Strong City Studios in the Bronx, which was it was where Jazzy J was. And, you know, Diamond was also using that studio. So, you know, I got friendly through that studio and with meeting with Diamond.
Are you technically like an honorary member of DITC too?
Basically, because I know all them dudes in like the area of the Bronx where they from. My family is from. So, you know, I know AZ for 100 years, Showbiz, Fat Joe, you know, so it's basically like I did so many stuff with them. It's like I was an honorary member.
Now, I had Phantasm for the Cellar Dwellers on last week, and we were talking about the boroughs, and he said he thought Brooklyn could take out any borough. Isn't that kind of almost blasphemy, like with hip hop starting in the Bronx?
Well, I would say so, because the Bronx is the home of it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I think that, you know, Brooklyn definitely got a strong claim to it. So does Queens, you know. But I think, you know, if you're going to go through the history of it, it started in the Bronx.
And y'all got an all-star lineup out of the Bronx as well that could probably go up against Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely.
Now, when Pooba decided to, like, step away from the group, was that for, like, creative differences, or was it, like, business?
Well, a lot of creative differences. Then you got to understand, like I said, you know, like, you got most people that was grouped for 5 or 6 years struggling to get a deal. We had literally come together about 8 months before we put out the album. So we was never really a group like that. You understand? Yeah. So, you know, it was understood he'll go do his thing. You know, it was what it was, but we still managed to keep it going.
Now, you began working on the first solo album, Wild Cowboys.
Oh, yeah.
Album was released July 15th, 96. Loud Records, featuring a production by DJ OG, Diamond D, Pete Rock, Alamo, Minnesota, who I interviewed on the show. The Beat Miners, Showbiz from Showbiz and AG, Buck Wild, Dante Ross. Do you feel like when that album dropped, it was almost like when Busta Rhymes dropped his first solo?
Well, I feel like, you know, like being like that was my Bronx album. I was back living in the Bronx then. You know what I'm saying? I was hanging out with these people, and I said, I just want to make an album with my peoples that I'm with daily on it. And, you know, that was probably my most fun album to make. you know, we had a lot of fun in the sessions and stuff. So, you know, that was definitely, you know, a great period in my musical career. You know, I still stand on it. It's considered an underground classic.
And what made you come up with the whole Wild Cowboys theme?
Well, basically, you know, it was a crew uptown called Wild Cowboys. Then,
okay,
it was a name that I liked also, you know, so I just combined the two together and made it happen.
And is that album like probably one that you hold probably dearest to your heart, being it was your first solo?
Definitely, because that was my solo joint. And that was an album where I really got everybody together who I wanted to get. It was a good time. I got everybody who I needed to get, Pete Rock, and, you know, everybody who I wanted to get on it, I was able to get.
Yeah, I remember the rollout on that, too. I think people were really anticipating that for a while. And then when it came out, I think they were really, really excited.
No question.
Now, 97, y'all reunited, Brand Nubian. Was there actually talks before that?
Yeah, it was. We just had to get the right time when everybody's schedule could coincide and we could actually get it together.
And I actually really like that album too, Foundation. And
yeah.
And I think it's really good for hip hop, like hip hop, when groups actually get back together, because I think it seems like the group thing is a lot harder than just being a solo.
Yeah, because you got to deal with different personalities and, you know, everybody's egocentricities. And, you know, when you're by yourself, it's just you. When you're with a group, you got to learn how to give and take, per se.
Like they said, leaders in New School, like Busta and Old Boy used to fight before and after the show. Like, y'all never had no situations like that, right?
No, we never really got to that. You understand? Like, we never gotten to no fighting or anything like that, no.
Yeah, I thought that was crazy that dudes would actually fight before the show. And then
yeah, that was kind of crazy.
After the show. Now, I interviewed Elder Sensei, and he told me a story how he ended up doing the collab album with you.
Oh, yeah.
But I didn't realize you had a collab album with Aguilar. Like, how did that one come about?
Well, you know, like I said, I've known Ag for a long, long time. You know, Ag used to come when I was uptown. He'd come to the crib sometimes and we'd collaborate. And I was always a big fan of Ag. And, you know, we finally had got a time together when we could put it down, and we just laid it out like that. Like I said, like Ag, very underrated producer.
Yeah.
You know, very underrated MC. You know, a good friend of mine. At that space of time, we both had the minute, we both had the time to get it together, and we just laid it down.
Yeah, he's definitely one of those guys that I think is totally overlooked, because I just reviewed a song with him in Tragedy Gaddafi, and it sounds like as dope as any hip hop song that you could drop today.
Exactly.
Now, you was on the House of Pain second album. You also had two songs on the Whitey Ford Sings the Blues. Now, how did you with Everlast end up forming a relationship like that?
Well, you know, Eric is originally from New York.
Oh, yeah, know? Yeah, that's so, right. Like, yeah.
He had a song, I forgot the name of it, that was a mainstream song in the hood. And, you know, I met him through Dante, and we became real cool. I used to go out to L.A. and stay at his crib, man. He's still, to this day, is real cool with him. And, He said he needed me to do a couple of joints, and I came out and we put it down.
That's what's up. That's what's up, man. And I forgot the whole Dante Ross connection over there, because Dante Ross did start producing some of the House of Pain. After the first album, was it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, I already asked you about being an honorary member of DITC, and you pretty much work with everybody. You got this new song I heard with Diamond Deed. I mean, it sounds, oh my gosh, it sounds so really, really dope, man. The beat is dope. Your flow is dope. What is it like working with Diamond Deed, man? I mean, he's one of my favorites of all time.
It's easy to work with Diamond because besides having dope beats and doing stuff, Diamond is a friend of mine, a personal friend. So it's easier when you're working with somebody that knows you, that knows what you like. Like Diamond, when I worked with Diamond, he automatically knew that I would like that beat. And he knew that I would be able to flow on it. And, you know, like, me and Diamond got an unspoken, like, Diamond basically got a pulse on me. he always got a pulse on me of what I what he think I would like and how we put it down with. That was a no-brainer just to do that with Diamond.
And what's that supposed to be off of? His new Dime piece out?
Yeah, the new Dime piece, three album duos. Like, it's a mean joint. Like, Diamond, he's doing well with those, no question.
Now, I know I'm seeing every day, man. You get up, you do your videos, you go to work, you be at work doing the videos. And how long you been in the medical field now?
I was in the medical field for about 4 years now. You know, it was something I went to school for. I went to school for sterile processing. So, you know, it was a good thing. Benefits, retirement plan, you know, and a lot in this rap. You know, it is SAG who got retirement, but it's really, you know, it's really no benefits. And, yeah. You know, a lot of the older rappers, man, like now they coming in the need. And I didn't want to get into that position, man. So I tried to catch that ahead of time.
I saw where you was pushing back. I guess people were trying to say something about you working at the hospital.
Yeah, and I'm trying to tell you, like 90% of the world works. You understand? And
yeah,
contrary to what you believe, like a lot of these rappers I know personally, like a lot of them is struggling, man, and they want to keep up that image of being this aura of grandeur. When it's not really like that, man. A lot of dudes are struggling. And before I struggle, I got a family. I got two daughters, you know, I gotta feed them and take care of them. So I went to work, man. It was something I loved to do, something I went to school for. I'm specialized in it. So I'm out there.
I think like just cause the way rappers rap, I think people do get a false perception of just the lifestyle of rappers whatnot. Now, a lot of people have been talking about unions, like that the artists need unions. I mean, do you think we'll ever see a day where the music business has a union for artists?
Well, I do think I'll see a day. I think it's coming soon. I see where a lot of artists like Nas and different artists are involved in trying to formulate something like that, which is needed, you know, which is take care of some of the veterans and teach some of these new up-and-comers what to do with their money so they don't get in a position as some of the veterans. And I think that's needed.
Yeah, and it's like they got it in the movie business, but they don't got it in the music business. I mean, exactly. I'm pretty sure that's intentional.
Exactly. I think so also.
Now, every time Lord Jamar comes out with something controversial or says something, do people always run to you and try to get your input on everything?
Yeah, but they ask me all the time. I tell them, I say, I don't care if the earth is round or flat. I don't care if it's a triangle. My bills are still the same, so... You ain't got to ask me that. As far as the Puerto Rican, like, I'm getting ready to do a song with Fat Joe. So I came up with Puerto Ricans in the Bronx as different to any borough in New York. See, you got different boroughs where, for instance, you got Brooklyn that may have Sunset Park and Bushwick. Those are like Spanish Puerto Rican sections, Williamsburg. Where in the Bronx, South Bronx is Puerto Ricans and blacks. Fordham Road is Puerto Ricans and blacks. The concourse is for Puerto Ricans and blacks. They've always grown together. So, you know, I'm not even in that argument at all.
Yeah, well, I've always been under the impression that hip-hop's supposed to be about unity. Yeah. So to me, that shouldn't even really be a hip-hop conversation because it's become very divisive, I think.
It has. It definitely has.
I mean, to a point you got, like, Crazy Legs talking about wanting to box Lord Jamar.
Yeah, like, yeah, it's going to extreme measures, man. And it's like... I always tell people, like, Jamar, he's a grown man. He'll do what he do. They'll figure it out. You know, at his views, sometimes I don't necessarily view my views as the same as his. We still down together, but, you know, he's entitled to his opinion. I'm entitled to mine.
It seems like, though, people try to, like, go, like, be upset because you won't push back on him.
Yeah, well, you know, the FBA dudes came at me and I told them, I said, you know, I don't need no letters to know who I am. I was black before the letters, you understand? So, you know, FBA, whatever, you know, y'all want to be FBA, be FBA. But I'm not going to let nobody, I don't care who it is, try to make me decide, you know, pick a side. I'm like, who is you to tell me to pick a side? No, you come make me pick a side. How about that? How about, you know, then a lot of people is talking about Fat Joe, this and that. I spoke to Joe. You know, Joe said, all these people that's talking this, ain't nobody came in my face and said nothing yet. They talk about they're going to cancel Joe. Joe, it's too late for you to cancel Joe.
Yeah,
you understand?
Yeah.
It's too late for that. I mean, who are you fooling? You understand what I'm saying? Who are you fooling? You can't cancel Joe.
And it seems like with the Fat Joe thing that they upset, I guess, his comments on the FBA. So now they want to get upset about some other things he might have been saying for 25 years now.
I spoke to Joe, and just a little bit of our situation. He told me, he was like, you know, like these people, he said, X, these people was pushing at you, and you got after them after about 3 days. He said, picture somebody pushing at you every day for a couple of years. He said, you're going to get mad and be like, F you, and you broke and this and that, whatever. And the thing is, a lot of these dudes that is talking about that is broke. And they on here, and that's all they do is punch these keys. And when you see the person, you don't say nothing. And that's not fly to me. You know what I'm saying? So he told me he snapped. And he was like, you know, I didn't mean all of that. But, you know, you get tired of that every day.
Yeah. I also saw you going in. I mean, you be going in on a few things, actually, on the videos. There was something, I guess somebody was trying to say, was you was the worst member of Brand Nubian. Like, who was saying that? Like, trolls and stuff?
Yeah, I guess one of the trolls. And I was like, knock it off. You already know that's not true.
Yeah.
You understand? Like, don't, let's not even go on that angle. Like, you know that. Like, knock it off.
I would say, as far as music career goes, you numero uno.
Yeah, basically the longest. My feature list goes from Conway to Jay. You understand? And a million stops in between that train line.
I mean, because as far as the solo careers go, you definitely, you leading the race on that.
Yeah, and I'm still going. I'm not stopping, man. Yeah. I'm in the studio 2-3 days a week to this day. You know, I'm constantly, you're only as sharp as you use your blade.
Now, what's next for you? I mean, you working on a new solo? Is Brand Nubian going to be dropping any new albums? Or
I don't know about the Brand Nubian, but I know that I'm working on a new album with these people called the Manor Rail. Those are my people. I got something with my man Doughboy and I'm coming out of L.A. I'm getting ready. Divine Drummer sent me a beat package that I'm getting ready to open up and do. I got another album that's getting ready to be started with Ella Sensei. And, you know, like I said, I'm always in the lab. I'm always working. Me and Diamond definitely going to do something again. So I'm always working.
And, I mean, you've always done a lot of features. Is there a feature for you that stands out the most?
Probably the one with Big, because I did that when he was still alive. You know, we went to the studio and we did that together when he was still alive. So that definitely stands out, you know, as one of my standouts in my career.
And how long you been staying in the Carolinas now, man?
Well, my mother's actually, my family's from here, but okay. I've been down here, me personally, living now about 4 years.
Somebody asked, how did the Native Tongues Experience show this Saturday come together? Was you at that?
Well, I mean, like, what it is basically is, like, they're going to just be playing a collection of Native Tongue music, Jungle Brothers, Tribe, Black Sheep, and I'm going to just come and do a quick medley of my verses on different Brand Nubian joints, just to, you know, represent for Brand Nubian and show like we still here.
And do y'all still tour at all? Or
yeah, definitely, we still do shows. We still do shows.
And I mean, I'm guessing like you get most of your shows overseas, like a lot of artists from the era.
Well, you know, we haven't been overseas as a group in a minute, because everybody passports ain't right. But I still go overseas, and, you know, we still do stuff in the States, definitely.
And I'm pretty sure you huge over, like, Germany, right? You do a lot of stuff in Germany?
Germany, Japan. In Germany alone, you got about 15 cities you can just do in Germany. So Germany's always a plus.
Like, why is it that they still seem to appreciate the hip hop from that era more than the United States, you think?
I think because they still love the culture of it. You know, they understand the aesthetic of it, but they still love that deep down culture, actually seeing scratching and seeing the DJ. Like, I've been to shows in Europe where it's somebody my age and they bring their sons to the show and the little kids to the show to let them see the pure essence of it.
Yeah, because it seems like the biggest problem is there's no balance, really. Like, you know, when you came up, you had your gangster rappers, you had your conscious rappers, your backpack rappers, you had what I would call your clean rappers, like the Will Smiths and stuff like that. You know, you even had your commercial mainstream rappers as well. And now it's just one sound, man.
And now everybody sounds the same. You know, it's like I listen to some of these young kids and I like some of the stuff. It's just that I don't know who it is, because to me, they all got the same. They all got the same cadence, the same flow. The videos are all the same. You know, that's why they don't really last too long.
Yeah, Eric Sermon was saying that he thinks none of this mainstream rap music or hip hop, whatever you want to call it, is probably going to last. Like,
some of these songs that sound good now, I can't see an artist doing 30 years from now. Yeah. You know, going somewhere and doing this song when you're 45, 50 years old, I don't see it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of their fan base is going to end up growing up to the point where they might start listening to a lot of different stuff.
Yeah, they're going to age out of that. Mm-hmm.
Now, and the DJ element, like, what do you think caused that? Like, DJs are really not even part of the group structure anymore.
Yeah, and that's a shame, because, like, most people who I know who are really, really touring, that's older, that's my age and stuff, the DJ's very important part of it, man. That enhances the show, you know, like, when I go places, I always try to have a DJ with me, man, like, as opposed to just going on stage, having somebody press the computer and, you know, like, rhyming over the words. And, you know, the DJ a lot of times can give the MC a break. A lot of times the DJ has his own routine. You can let him get about 5 or 10 minutes doing the show and you can recover and keep on going. That's how a lot of older dudes like myself and people are able to do such longer shows. You understand? I'm prepared at any given time to do an hour and a half to 2 hour shows by myself. Man. Just me on the mic with nobody else. That's why I go to the gym and get in shape. That's why I don't take all them pills and stuff, so my body is getting broken down. You see a lot of these young boys, their bodies is broken down after by the time they get 30, 35.
When's the last time you did a show in the Carolinas?
Probably the last time I did a show in the Carolinas, maybe about September or October. I stayed doing a couple of shows around in the Carolinas.
Mm-hmm. Are you in tune with any of the artists in the Carolinas, up and coming and stuff?
I like, what's my man name? I can't think of his name. Now, it's a kid out of Raleigh who I really like a lot. Jesus, I can't think of his name right now, but he's a really good artist. You know, I try to stay abreast of what's going on in the area.
You deal with Yagfu Front at all?
Oh, yeah, definitely Yagfu Front. The other group that Ninth Wonder had.
Little Brother,
yeah. I always like their stuff, and I seen Fonte perform one time. So, you know, I definitely like to stay abreast with that Rhapsody. You know, OC from NC, you know, different artists like that, definitely. J. Cole, you know, I rock with J.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Living in Carolina, I mean, as long as you have, I'm pretty sure you could tell, like, the influence that hip-hop has on the Carolinas, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, Carolina was always a big show base for Brand New Bean. You know, like, when you knew when you came to Carolina, you was going to do Greensboro. You was going to do Raleigh, Charlotte. You may go down to Greenville, Wilmington. You know what I'm saying? So it was always place, Asheville out there. It was always different places in Carolina to perform.
Somebody says they saw you perform in Burlington last year.
Yeah, Burlington, definitely. Mm-hmm.
Have you ever been to Cat's Cradle?
Yeah, definitely at the Cat's Cradle. Yeah, Chapel Hill out that way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's one of those venues that is definitely great for, like, a lot of 90s hip-hop cats.
Yeah, definitely Cat's Cradle. They've been around for a long time.
Yeah. So I ain't going to take up all your time, man. I know you're a busy man. I know you probably got some new music to go write.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to have some new stuff out soon, man. I was just talking with my man Doughboy today. You know, I'm getting ready to speed it up in a minute, man, start getting on it more, you know. Like I said, I'm in the studio 2-3 times a week, so I'm always putting something together, you know. And I move on a feeling, so you know I'm in a good space right now. So I'm getting ready to start zooming.
I saw something where you was talking about trying to become like a surgical assistant or something. You still trying to make that move?
Yeah, the surgical tech. I'm thinking about it. You know that involves a lot. That means actually standing in the room, handing the surgeon the actual instruments while he's doing the surgery. And in the hospital, surgeries can be anywhere from 30 minutes to 6-7 hours. So
Yeah.
You know, and that's something you really got to know what you're doing, because, you know, you hand the doctor the wrong instrument, you're liable to get thrown out the room. I've seen it happen.
Yeah, I got hit by a car. I had 3 surgeries. That would have been amazing if I had Sadat X in the surgery room.
No question.
Why are you going to take up too much of your time, man? Before you go, to any shout-outs you want to do?
I give a shout-out to you, Paul Masson, in the show, live from Vietnam, definitely. Check it out.
Appreciate it.
Give a shout-out to that. Give a shout-out to all the good people of Carolina. Give a shout-out to all the people that rock with Brand New Me and Sadat X, you know, that have been part of this journey, that's still a part of this journey, that always show me love. You know, you can check me out, Sadat X, Brand New Me on IG, Derek Murphy on Facebook. I answer it. It's me. And everybody, peace and love. And always remember, protect and take care of these babies.
I appreciate you taking time out to do this, man.
No question. Nope, not a problem.
And it's truly an honor, man.
Likewise, man. I had a good time.
All right, you too. Enjoy the rest of your night, man.
All right, Paul. Peace.
All right, peace. Well, there you have it. One and only Sadat X, Brand Nubian, All for One, Wild Cowboy himself. Very great guy, man. I think, like, I really, this last year and this coming up month and last month, a lot of digging in the crates for these interviews. I mean, I started out the year with, we had Young Bleed already. We've had Phantasm, the Cellar Dwellers. We had, of course, Sadat X himself, Chili Too Cold. I forgot who else, man. Really crazy, though. Really crazy. I can only imagine every time, like, Lord Jamar literally says something viral, people probably just be blowing up his text message or blowing up his Instagram and whatnot. You know what I'm saying? Oh, yeah, Cool Kim of the UMCs. Started out the year with Cool Kim of the UMCs, Young Bleed, Chili Too Cold, Phantasm, Cellar Dwellers, and now Sadat X, man. And next week, we're probably going to have either Unsigned Artist or trying to book Aguilar for an interview. And the week after that, we got Hakeem Green for Channel Live is coming back on. We're going to talk about his new song, and we're probably going to talk about Eminem, the Elvis of hip hop, and Jordan versus LeBron, probably some of these NBA trades. Up. Oh, let's bring on my man himself, Jones.
Peace.
How you feeling?
Hey, man, I'm all right, man. That was dope right there.
Great guy, right?
Yeah, man. Great guy. I just want to show off this.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, shit.
I've been holding on to this since day one.
Like, who's all on that cover right there? You got Sadat, Alamo, who else? OG, one of them's OG, right?
Mm-hmm. I can't remember the other brother's name right now. One of the Money Boss players.
Oh, was that Minnesota on the front cover with him? Which one you talking about?
Oh, snap. I couldn't know.
You talking about down? Face. It might be him down there in the front.
Yeah, I wouldn't know him by face. But yeah, it's one of my favorite albums ever.
I interviewed him on his show, man. Just go back, watch the interview, and you'll be able to tell.
I'll watch him. That one.
Yo, what do you think? Brooklyn, Bronx, like, old boy from Cellar Dweller said Brooklyn got everybody beat, man. Like, you think that's blasphemy for me?
Nah, Brooklyn is deep.
They're deep, right?
Brooklyn is deep.
Especially if you talk about when Biggie was alive.
Yeah, Brooklyn is deep because, you know, I mean, to get to Biggie, you got to, you know, the Big Daddy Kanes, just Brooklyn, man. Audio 2 representing Brooklyn. They had the chant in the background.
Smoother Hustler, M.O.P.,
mm-hmm.
The list goes on. I mean, New York back then was stacked in every borough, though, right?
Yeah. Sean Price.
Sean Price. Yeah.
Brother J. Brother J.
Illa G.
Mm-hmm.
Most of Master Ace, appreciate that, Nick. Master Ace, all no of them, no the boot camp click, right? Damn near everybody in the boot camp click.
No, I don't know if they all from Brooklyn. I think they all
from Brooklyn.
Smith and Wesson, yeah, Buckshot,
Rockness, Buckshot,
Ruck and Rock, yeah.
Yo, you remember that vid? Did you see that video where the Buckshot situation?
I didn't watch the action, but I was very aware of the situation.
But you didn't watch like how it kind of started? Like where the guy was walked up on filming Buckshot and on a live, like an Instagram live, and called him and said he was a snitch.
Yeah,
the guy walked past him, but Buckshot kept following him.
Yeah, man, that was bad business.
You think like him following kind of like made the situation a little worse?
Yeah, it's one. I mean, from outside looking in, it's like one of those in the heat of the moment situations. You know what I'm saying? Where, you know, anything can happen, but you just in the heat of the moment, you know, because from what I understand, you know, the building they was at, that's Buck's property.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was supposed to, because he called the cops on some people that were squatting.
Yeah, and he just asked them to clear out.
Which is technically isn't snitching. It's not snitching. That's the thing. People got snitching so misconstrued. Like they've redefined what snitching is.
If I'm a property owner and you up in my vacant spot and you refusing to leave, you interrupting business. You need to move out. You need to go. Yeah.
Hey, Jones, stay there for a second. We're gonna come right back. We're gonna give him a quick dizzle break. Right.
Tropical drink.
Me and my team whenever we link up, they wanna be drink up. We sit down and relax and have few glasses when there's things to think about. Like I'm nice with the boss when I tend to the boss and I'm not talking drink up. So tell the bartender that tend to the bar to please pass me a big cup of. And tell that waitress is waiting on us to put a little ice in it. Now watch the ice become weightless like the spaceships that I be sitting in. No waiting list, another waiting for that tropical twist. That'll kick in your taste buds. Now taste some. Now I insist it's the
drizzle.
Yeah, that's right. Really mean it. You could Dizzle too. Dizzle is a premium luxury liqueur mixed with agave tequila, cognac, and orange liquor mango mix. So your Dizzle on ice, and it's nice. Just want to order your very own bottle or bottles, go to DizzleBrand.com. And shouts out to Mike Dizzle. That was him throwing up the glasses with the cheers.
The coolest cat. The coolest cat in that.
Mike Dizzle. Now, Mike Dizzle's cool.
That joint is joint.
And he's a celebrity barber.
That commercial should be on TV.
Actually, I don't know. Man. Chip Fu would argue with you. Chip Fu would argue with you about who the coolest cat in that commercial was.
I was actually going to say the coolest cat that wasn't rapping. But I mean, come on, man. That last shot at the end.
Moves. Appreciate you tuning in. You never, like, so you started on the live from Vietnam with me. You started episode one, right? You didn't stay on for none of the interviews, though, right?
Say what?
You didn't make it for none of the interviews, did you?
Nah, I wanted to be part of this one, but you know, our test run yesterday, it wasn't proven promising. But
well, it sounds like everything's good right now, so you should be able to include you in going forward, man.
Yeah, I think my laptop likes you, man. My laptop like, oh, we messing with Paul. Let me work right now. So things been smooth for the last 48 hours.
What's the interview for you that Live from Vietnam's done that like stands out to you, like as just really probably the most interesting or maybe the most accomplishing or?
I think you know what you know for me it's in levels. You know what I'm saying? Especially just being down with you and just seeing the overall progress from where it started, but like Kid Sensation, you know, Kid Sensation, man, that definitely stood out. Elder Sensei, and I forget the brother's name, man. The brother that he hold the seminars for artists.
Oh, Mickey Fax.
No. Oh, no, not Mickey Fax, but Mickey Fax was definitely a dope one. The Radio Brother. I think he's up in Charlotte.
Up in Charlotte.
I don't know. He had Yaku? All the information, man. Nah, he had all the information.
Oh, Chuck T. You know? Chuck T.
Yeah, DJ Chuck T. That was a dope one.
Chuck T was like, when it came to clips, I ain't gonna lie, Chuck T got probably way more views than everybody else when it came to the clips.
I think that's in relation to the content, to the content coming from the platform.
And I definitely want to have Chuck T back on because he's always got a lot of interesting stuff to say. He stands on what he says, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he's trying to educate. So, you know, I think a lot of people that that's tuning in and checking you out, you know, they're trying to get informed as well. So that resonates with anybody, you know, in any aspect of art and entertainment when you're getting some good information.
I think for me, I really wish the microphone was better, but I had that audio mixer with the echoey mic at first. And I think for me, one of my favorites was Lenny Williams.
I was going to bring that up too.
And I think the Melvin Riley as well are like really two of my favorites just because they're not really the hip hop interviews. And I just think about timeless hit records. I think those two have the really timeless hit records, because timeless hip hop hits are different than timeless like Lenny Williams hits and Melvin Riley hits. I mean,
well, you know what's dope? It's like especially Melvin Riley's time. So it's like I don't know. You kind of just going off the show. It's kind of like you went chronologically. You know what I'm saying? Because Lenny Williams is from a different era of Melvin. You know what I'm saying?
But yeah.
We surely know that Melvin Riley and his brothers, they definitely influenced by Lenny. You know, so they dropped like what? Like in the 80s?
Lenny was in the 70s. Yeah, Melvin was in the 80s.
Right, you know. And with Melvin and them, I mean, they was hitting their stride in the 80s and rising along with some of the hip hop that we call timeless. You know, their music was right out there with, you know, the Salt and Peppers, the Kid and Plays, you know what I mean? The Heavy D's. So like, and like y'all was talking about earlier, you know, like you were talking about with Sadat, the variety. Variety is huge.
No, it was. And, you know, even with the gangster music, it wasn't like the rappers started calling themselves gangster rappers. That was the labels putting the label on it just to try to, I guess, have a little separation and try to make it maybe stand out from the rest or something.
Yeah. Yeah, because back to variety and originality, you know, it's like being original. Was the number one thing for hip hop, being original, you know. But
I can only imagine, man. Like every time Lord Jamar says something, people hit Sadat up like, "Yo, what's up with your boy, man? He tripping, man."
But isn't that crazy? Because it's like you know. Even though it's you know it's easy to look at this stuff as just entertainment, but these are real people. You know what I'm saying? It's really no different than I don't know, somebody seeing one of your friends or one of your family members, like, you know, acting up like, yo, I saw your boy. It's like you get that phone call. It's like, yo, man, I saw Jones at the gas station, man. He was wilding. You know, you're going to get that call. But when you love your people, you love your people.
What's your take on the flat earthers?
I have love for humanity.
I mean, do you think they have a argument? Do they present a good argument of why they think the earth is flat?
No, but they do have an argument, but no.
But it's not a good one. No. I mean, because I would think it would just be as simple as if the earth was flat, then the sun would beam all day long. I think it would be just that simple.
Oh, you talking about as you go through the day and you can look at the you can look at the shadows from trees and building, and as the day goes, the shadows start getting closer and closer until it's just dark. Yeah.
It would seem like if it was flat earth, it wouldn't get dark at all.
I know, right? And then, you know, you got places like Alaska, they have their periods of darkness.
Yeah, they have so many days straight where it's dark. Yeah.
I think it's due to rotation, but hey, what do I know?
Is there a conspiracy like that you believe or whatnot or don't believe?
Yeah.
Is there any conspiracies out there that just stand out to you? Like we were talking about it earlier. Do you think man landed on the moon?
Why are you doing this right here, man?
But you scared of what people gonna think if you
Yeah, man. We landed on the moon, yo.
I don't believe so.
Well, I can't say I wasn't there. I think man landed on the moon, man. Yo.
I think that shit was a movie star.
Okay. So here's So my thing is like, I mean, if it can be disproven, it's cool. You know, I'm going to use the law of the land, you know, innocent until proven guilty. Until I can see the proven guilty, you know, I'm all right.
Yeah,
but you know, there's things that were called conspiracies years and decades ago. That stuff is straight up reality.
But why we ain't seen video of nobody else landing on the moon? Why they ain't still trying to land on the moon today? Why they ain't charging people to go to the moon right now? You know how much money you can make for a flight to the moon? You know, there's some dumb billionaire like the one that got in the submarine to go to the Titanic that had paid for that shit.
But you know what's crazy about that situation is that there's people going to the wreckage of the Titanic and other things, you know, naval ships. You know, they go underwater to find that stuff, but they're using different technology.
But yeah, let's me and you hop in a submarine and go check it out.
No, because the accident that you're talking about, they wasn't using like some United States or whatever country's like best submarine equipment. This is like, you know, some independent stuff. And from those articles, you know, it sounded like they just put it together with duct tape, you know.
What you got anything specifically you want to talk about? Any specific topics?
I mean, honestly, you know, I'm just going to jump off the piece with Sadat just now, man. I think a lot was said, you know, especially in regards to like a maturity, you know, because man, maturity has a way of showing you what you know, what you're into and why you were into something. You know, there's a lot of music. I'm not going to name no artist names, but there's a lot of music I listened to growing up. It don't hit the same. You know, it's because I'm not 13 anymore. You know, when I was 13, just hearing somebody, forget that. When I was like 11, just hearing somebody cuss, you know, it was like exciting, or it made me laugh, you know, or I hear, you know, cats telling some wild sexualized story. And it's like, y'all, you know, but that didn't turn into the stuff that I listen to all the time, man.
You know something I realized about him after interviewing him? He probably does a lot more interviews than most of the people I interview. You didn't see how, like, you didn't notice how he didn't drag out none of his answers, really?
Oh, nah. He was loose. He was chilling. But at the same time,
he was chilling, but you notice how he answered the question. He didn't get to this long explanation. And then he was, you know, he said it fast enough where I could actually get to the next one and the next one and the next one. You know what I'm saying? And you know, I don't got a problem with when people do drag it out. You know what I'm saying? But I could just tell by the way he answered the questions, he's used to doing a lot of interviews probably.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things I've been thinking about, you know, as far as just getting sharper with things is, man, a good story is a good story. And sometimes it might be a long way around the story, as long as you doing that well.
Yeah.
But, and then at the same time, you know, when you keeping it professional, or, you know, when you keeping it, you know, direct, you know, if you take too long to explain something like I'm doing now, you know, you can keep on moving into other things.
Yo, something he said too at the beginning, I might have to manly clip up, is why that song with him and Biggie didn't make the album.
Oh, word. And check this out. On that, I jumped in like after that. But
he said that's deep for him and Diddy.
Yo, that's one of the few songs. I don't know about the beat, but that's one of the few songs on, because that's after Biggie died. Yeah, so that's after. So, but that's one of the few songs on there that was originally done with, you know, Biggie and the artist.
Yeah, and he said it didn't make the album because I guess him beef with him and Puff and whatnot. But they ended up releasing it, I think, on the album later.
Yeah, it was after Biggie died. It was one of those posthumous albums, man.
Yeah, I forgot the name of the album. But he said that was the feature for him that really stood out, though, the most, because he did that when Biggie was alive.
Right, and, you know, I had on my list, here's what I wrote. I said, is there a joint you were on or could have been on that didn't happen? And that's one of those ones because, you know, I guess you got to think about how Puff was trying to direct Bad Boy in the image, you know, as far as get them hits out. But I think that song, it sounded like it was recorded during Ready to Die days. I think that song would have fit, you know. But then again, it's like, you know, he still got the what out of it with him and Method Man.
Yeah. Wow, man. Racking them up, man. Racking them up. I mean, he's officially, technically, a Digging in the Crates member, I guess you could say. You know, and I thought another thing interesting is, like, I, you know, I'm not afraid to say, like, the fact that somebody would say he was the third best dude in the group. I mean, he's had the best musical solo career out of all three of those guys. I mean, no disrespect to Lord Jamar or Pooba, you know, but I never really listened to Lord Jamar's whole album like that, I don't think, when he dropped. Pooba, mm-hmm. I listened to Pooba's solo albums, but he doesn't have a bunch of them, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he's got a... So, the first one, that's the one with...
What, Masters of Ceremony?
Mm-hmm. No. But that's
how he had the 2000. The first album out there. His first album wasn't 2000?
No, the first album is 360. What Goes Around Comes Around.
Okay, that's right. Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
That's when he jumped out with the Tommy Hilfiger playbook.
And was that the only single on the album?
Nah, he had a. he had another song with Mary J. Blige.
Oh, that's
the first
right.
time.
That's
the
right.
first time he linked with Mary J. Blige was the title track was the 411. That was on Mary's album.
And yeah,
they had one on Pooba's album. I can't remember the title of it.
That was a good time for Pooba right there.
Oh yeah, man.
That was a good time for him.
It was a good time for rap fans and music fans too. You know what
and
I mean?
And the 2000 album was kind of futuristic, I thought. At that time.
And the main producer on that album, a brother named Mark the Spark, which I believe has
Mark the Spark.
He
from the Carolinas?
As well.
I believe so.
Yeah.
Where did I first hear about Mark the Spark from?
For me, he just had one of them names that was being shouted out by people.
Yeah,
but I'm sure if I hit the Google and be like produced by Mark the Spark, you know, we're gonna find a whole bunch of stuff. But he definitely laid down the sound for Grand Pooba album number 2000.
And there was some other cats I thought he produced for around that time. Was it Mark the Spark or Mark the Spark?
I believe it's with a DA.
Let's see if we can find him. He almost had a sound like Nick Wiz.
Well, that's what was crazy about that time, man. I can't say if he had a sound like Nick Wiz, but he was a dope producer's name, you know, and somebody I was looking for, you know, their beats.
I remember that. Okay, so he had an album called Cackalacka Raw. You remember that, right?
Slightly, I'm gonna have to
you remember
look at
that
it
Mark
get some names.
Mark Sparks presents Cackalacka Raw. I kind of remember that.
Can't say I do, man, but
you know what? That's a good one to try to look up and see if I can interview him.
Yeah,
I totally forgot about Mark the Spark. And he was saying, like, Aguilar, you know, I'm glad he said that Aguilar was definitely a cat that's overlooked as a rapper and a producer. Because that song with him and Tragedy Gaddafi it's bananas, yo.
Yeah.
It's total bananas.
Aguilar's Aguilar. The stuff he did for himself, the stuff he did with Dipset at that time.
Yeah, yeah. I forgot about that.
A lot of good stuff. And then just his own stuff.
Man, so what do we see? Where do we think hip hop goes from here, man?
In the words of Mos Def, man. Mos Def said on his first album, Black on Both Sides, on the intro, he said, next time, you know, you want to ask or know where hip hop is going, ask where you going.
Are we ever going to see, like, more balance in the mainstream at any point, you think? Or you think it's going to just stay the way it is for a while now?
You know what? I think,
how long can this sound stay? Think about it. The 80s had the 80s sound. 90s, you know, had a little bit of the 80s at the early 90s. It was like late 80s, early 90s. It still had that sound, but... Once 9-4 hit, the sound just totally changed to like 2000. And in 2000s hit, the sound kind of started changing somewhat. But like this last sound, it's like, damn, how long y'all going to go with this sound? It's been almost like 15 years now.
Yeah, it was wild, you know, from my observation, it's like, I mean, when you just look at the whole artistic landscape, it's like, you know, the more advanced we get, you know, with like all the stuff like technology. Like, you know, like check it. It's like people are hearing jazz, people start hearing blues, people start hearing rock and roll, whatever. And then it's like time goes on and it's like the origins of a lot of music genres were pretty much like centralized, localized and stuff. So the more ears you get in onto it, you're going to end up with different styles, man. You know?
But you would think they'd be bored of the sound by now, man. Like, if we dealt with any sound for too long, even like say you just had, like I love Mobb Deep, just for example, I love Mobb Deep, but 20 straight years of Mobb Deep sounding the same after a while would be like, all right, guys, it's time to evolve. You know what I'm saying? It's time to try something new. You know what I'm saying? Let's switch it up a little bit.
And they was about originality. Like, they from Queens, but they ain't come out trying to like, and I know time had passed, but they ain't come out trying to like sound exactly like Run DMC. They didn't, I mean, and let's go with their counterparts, that Mobb Deep, Nas, Cormega, I guess to like a, you know, to some people, they might just sound New York, but they all got different styles and presentations.
I would argue like, the Mobb Deep like, sound.
What's the name of Mobb Deep's first album?
The Infamous. Yeah.
Okay. Does the Infamous sound like they were trying to make another Illmatic just because they were some young? Nah, they was trying to, they came through with.
You know what it sounds like to me? Hmm. It sounds like they saw Wu-Tang and said, yo, they got this sound that just stands out. It's just different than everything mm-hmm. else. And we got to find a sound that we got to step it up, of course, because you got Nas and you got, you know, Wu-Tang time. Like, I think they felt like they had to step up their sound and they had to find a sound that just stood out and nobody had. And that was undeniable, man. I think the Infamous sound is just undeniable.
You know what? And I think, you know, for the respective names that you named and others at that time, it's like they were still, everybody wants to have their own.
Oh, I forgot. Juvenile Hell was their first album. Yeah.
I see that.
I forgot. True. Yeah, Juvenile Hell was their first album. But like, they had the best sophomore album of all time. When you take the first album and go to the second, they had the biggest growth, the biggest change, the biggest probably impact from a first album to a second album that I've ever heard, man. The Juvenile Hell to Infamous, it's like, whoa. It was, whoa. I mean, Juvenile Hell, don't get me wrong, they had Premier on there, they had Pete Rock, if I'm not mistaken. They had access to big-time producers.
You're dealing with two cats that are still growing in to who they becoming. So they showing that raw potential, and cats, you know, definitely worked with them. But then,
and they both got better mm-hmm. from that album. The voices kind of came to life.
Start maturing.
Yeah. Just production got better because I mean we know. I think Havoc was producing some on the first one, you know what I'm saying? But nah, man. I mean, I don't know anybody that you could say, hey, their first album wasn't all that, but their second album was bananas. Usually the first album, I mean, now DOS, I do think DOS Effects' second album is better than their first.
I love the first one, and I love.
But I feel like the second one is better with Silent Scheme production.
Yeah, that first one.
It said it's like the 50s power of the dollar versus Get Rich or Die Trying. Yeah, I would say it's like that. I mean, Power of the Dollar was a good album. Don't get me wrong. I would say that album was better than Juvenile Hell, probably. 50s power of the dollar.
What about?
Because he had How to Rob an Industry N-Word on there. He had that song, I think. And he had a lot of access to big producers at the time.
Get Rich or Die Trying, man. That is like, I would, man. It's like, I know how it is listening to something that I never heard before. And when I do that and I feel it, I always wonder about how the time was, man. And I promise, man. And you just knew something was about to drop when Get Rich or Die Trying was about to drop. Like you just felt it in the air.
I tell you what, Infamous is one of those albums, if you listen to it 50 years from now, it would age like fine wine, dude.
Mm-hmm.
It'll age just as good as any album in hip-hop that ages well, you know. Shit, I almost think J. Buddha Damage's second album might have been better than the first. This is what people got to realize about your second album. Like, look at a cat like J. Rue. So look at the production he had on the first album.
Mm-hmm.
He had Premiere when Premiere didn't have that sound. You remember when Premiere got found that Premiere sound that he just ran with? Because before, you couldn't just tell a Premiere beat like that.
Yeah, so...
You know what I'm saying?
First and then album...
he came up with this sound.
Right, because first album, No More Mr. Nice Guy... That's a sound. But then that second album, Stepping to the Arena, I was like, oh, like same producer, but this
but
is
way
different.
Better. And a lot of different stuff on there where you couldn't just tell.
And then number three, I believe number three was Hard to Earn. Respect is Hard to Earn. Yeah.
But even then, you couldn't tell. Every beat was a Premiere beat on there.
But he had that sound coming. Now,
and then he discovered that sound after that album. And then that's when, to me, their best album came out, which was Moment of Truth.
Moment of Truth.
That had that Premiere sound that, you know, he evolved into all through the album. That's when J. Rue the Damager benefited from that. J. Rue the Damager benefited from that sound. And... whatchamacallit, who I will always
Group Home,
they were like, you know when they say like coaches like Phil Jackson just benefited from Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen and Shaq and Kobe? That's how I almost look at it with Group Home. Like, they benefited because like Premiere was like Shaq and Kobe and Jordan and Pippen combined on the production. You know what I'm saying?
Because
the Group Home production was amazing. It was amazing, yo.
Group Home production was incredible.
It was so amazing. The Wrath of the Math production was amazing. The mm-hmm. Moment of Truth production was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those are like, to me, three of Premiere's best works.
Word up.
Oh, somebody said, I also feel like it's the case with Pete Rock and CL. We don't count out All Sold Out. I prefer the second, the main ingredient versus Mecca and the Soul Brother. I don't know about that because the first album had two bona fide singles on it with Troy and Straighten It Out. And Straighten It Out was even, when I heard that, I was like, wow.
Nah, you got to.
What?
Yeah, I did that.
Ain't that the album I'm thinking of? Those singles both off the album? Troy and Straighten It Out.
Oh, man. Something's missing.
What's missing? I don't know, but we about to wrap it up. We about to hit that.
Yeah, mommy.
We about to wrap it up here, though. We getting over the hour mark. Something you want to shout out before we go?
Man. Hey, I just want to shout you out. Peace to Sadat X. And, man, peace to everybody tuning in, man. And comment, man. Peace to the real heads out there. You know, every artist, everybody doing something. You know?
Yeah, and shit. What do we got here? Hard to Earn, my favorite from Gangstar. I got to go with Moment of Truth, but... There's no arguing and debating like a Gangstar album. Anyways,
I'm gonna take Seven to the Arena just because. And when I heard Check the Technique, that shit was incredible.
Hell yeah, hell yeah. Well, shit. About to wrap it up here. About to get off. See where I clip up some Sadat clips. Definitely shouts out to Sadat. Great dude. I know he'd be busy, and so I'm glad he took the time out. Wild Cowboy himself, I mean, dude literally had what is it, 9 group albums, 12 solo LPs, 1 EP, 2 collab albums, one with Elder Sensei and one with Aguilar. And he's got another album with Elder Sensei coming back out. That's new single with Sadat. I mean, with Diamond D is
Diamond D on the Dime bananas. Piece 3.
Yeah, it's bananas. I mean, I heard the teaser for that and I was like, wow.
Yeah, and also it didn't get mentioned, but
what
I saw online that in Charlotte tomorrow.
I asked him about it.
Oh, you did? Oh, word. Man, I too.
Yeah, you talking about the Native Tongue joint?
Yeah.
He said he'll be there to do something.
Word. Yeah. Yeah, they had his name on the poster that I saw. So
yeah, he said they're gonna be playing a lot of their music. Tribe, Jungle Brothers. I don't know if they're gonna be there though. Native Tongues.
Nah, it's listed as a tribute. And yeah, they got
some, so they'll be playing a lot of the music, and he'll just be there to actually perform and whatnot. Probably, which is smart though. Like if it's in Charlotte, you don't got to spend a lot for travel. You know, you ain't got to really get a hotel probably for him. He'll probably just do the show and just take him back to Raleigh. Who knows? He might be driving up himself if they're just paying for the travels that way.
Yeah, that brother be on the move.
I mean, how far is Raleigh from Charlotte?
It's a few hours. On how you drive. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know from the village is definitely
2 hours from the Ville. Yeah. Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, I wish I could be at that one, but it's all good.
All right, so what are we thinking? You think you got your connection down pat, whatnot? We could start having you come on and do some of the interviews going forward.
This is beautiful. Yes, sir. This is beautiful, right, man.
So you and if we don't get Aguilar next week, we're gonna have a probably a unsigned artist from Fayetteville.
Word. Oh, shout out Big Cass, man. I saw that clip yesterday.
Yeah, he had a nice. Yeah, he was killing that one clip.
Mm-hmm. Peter Stranger the Great.
Yeah, shouts out to Stranger the Great. Also was on that song with me and Phantasm. Go check that out on all streaming platforms called Ashes to Dust. Ashes with the number 2, Dust, Paul Masson, Phantasm, and Stranger the Great and whatnot. I'm telling you, man, you better join back on the show, man. We about to make a lot of interviews this year, yo.
Word up. I'm trying to make bank, bro. I'm trying to hit the Catalina Wine Convention.
I know that's right. All right, well, we about to wrap it up. Hit him with the outro, man, and I'm going to holler at you once I get off here.
All right. Peace.
Peace.